Hey, stranger. Hello to everyone listening. My name is Thoraya. This is the Hey Stranger podcast. And before we start, let me set the scene for you. I'm currently sitting in a chair at my local park, which also happens to be one of the biggest tourist attractions in my city. Across from me is an empty chair, and on today's and every episode, that empty chair will be filled one by one by people of different backgrounds, mindsets, and walks of life. The only criteria is that they are a stranger. All right, so welcome to my podcast.
Thanks. Nice to be here.
Thank you. If it's not too much trouble, can you pull the mic closer to yourself a little bit?
How's that?
That's perfect. Thank you so much. All right, so like I told you off camera, the theme of my podcast is finding strangers at the park and interviewing them.
All right.
So thanks for coming on. I know it's probably a little bit weird. Is it weird to you?
No, not at all.
Okay, cool. Do you do things like this often?
Well, no, I haven't been interviewed in the park in quite some time, so.
But it's happened before?
You know, I've been here my whole life, so I've seen a lot of things in this park.
Right. I feel like Balboa Park is sort of magical. Would you agree?
Yeah, there's always something.
Yeah. What's the craziest thing that's happened to you here?
Well, I had my wedding here.
Oh, no way.
So we were pretty much the crazy actors.
I see a lot of people taking pictures like before their wedding and stuff, but I've never seen the wedding here.
Well, I think the rules kind of changed after our wedding.
Oh, I see.
So we had 220 people and we turned it into a big rave.
Oh, really?
It was a costume masquerade rave. I don't think the park was really ready for that. I haven't seen anything like that since, so.
I have a feeling you do something really interesting for a living.
No, I'm retired now.
Oh, really? What do you do then? What do you like to do for fun?
I have property.
Oh, okay, cool.
So I just manage that.
So on this podcast, I also ask like really deep and personal questions too.
I can live with that.
Okay. The first question I have for you, do you have a secret you'd be willing to share with us?
I don't have any secrets.
No secrets?
No, not really. I had massive, massive heart failure young in life, and it completely changed the course of my life. And I spent 6 years dying before I got a heart transplant.
Oh, wow.
So I'm like living a complete second chance. So I don't have time for silliness.
You don't have time for secrets.
Yeah, or silliness in general. You just gotta, you know, I'm in the bonus round, so I can't really waste it.
That's such a cool way to look at it. How old were you when you first had the heart failure?
When I was 30, like almost on my 30th birthday. So I was an attorney. I was all sorts of things, and then all that ended. And it was before the ACA, and so I didn't have insurance because I was just starting my career. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden I was toast, and now I had a pre-existing condition. I couldn't get insurance, so I actually had to submit to being disabled, and I had to give up my career.
Dang.
And bankruptcy, all kinds of stuff. I ended up with an internal defibrillator. This device would monitor my heart, and then if it recognized a spasm, it would check back, and if it was still in the spasm, it would charge, and then it would check back, and if I was still in the spasm, it would shock me and shock my heart back into normal rhythm.
Just like you could have just been walking at the park and
I would have passed out because I'd be dying. So, and that happened. I had sudden death 4 times before I got a transplant, so I've technically died 4 times.
Wow. So was there any point in that time where you wanted to give up almost, or you thought that it was the end of it?
During that time, I mean, sure. I mean, suicidal ideation for any seriousness? No, not really. But, you know, there were just times where I was sort of just over it because, right. You know, I was failing. I really couldn't even, like, shower without mm-hmm. throwing up, you know, because I was in such a state of oxygen debt and I didn't really sleep. I didn't dream for 2 years. You know, everything was bad. And so there were just times where I thought, you know. But I was hanging in there. My wife and I, we got pregnant, like, right when all the chaos started. We got jiggy with our birth control. And she wanted to keep the child because she was young and naive and thought it would be okay to be a single mom. And it was kind of her call because I was expecting to die and everybody was saying I was not going to make it. So we ended up having our daughter. And so I really didn't want to die in front of my daughter. And I ended up the primary caregiver. So that was sort of motivation to try to stay alive and make it work. And I did. So I got lucky. I got an amazing transplant. And was reincarnated and never looked back.
Well, I'm glad you're here.
Thanks.
Yeah.
It's nice to be here.
So what's like the biggest thing you took away from that?
Wow, there's a lot, but it, you know, like I tell people, you know, if you can have a condition where you're absolutely certain you're going to die and then you completely recover, I highly recommend it. Because it clears up a lot of bullshit, you know, like you think you have it straight and then you get into a situation like that and then you realize a few things. And I was super ambitious. I bought into the whole American dream trip and, you know, I thought money and status and power was what I wanted, what it was, what you needed. Mm. And I realized that was not real and it wasn't even worthy. And it actually didn't make me happy. I was miserable and I didn't even realize why I was miserable. I thought I was doing all the right things. Mm-hmm. I was kicking ass and taking names, but what I was doing was just being miserable and useless in a lot. I was doing good work. I was a public defender, you know, and that's good work. Society is judged by how we treat our wretched, and we obviously don't treat them very well. So the work was quality, but my motivation, my mindset was not. And so while I was dying, I realized that the greatest pleasure and gift really of living was having quality time with people and being able to eat with them, particularly eat and drink with them. And so I realized in a lot of ways, even after I was bankrupt and I didn't really have anything, I mean, I still had privileges, so I didn't end up in the street. You know, we just chilled out and we would eat and hang out, and I had all this great time because I had time. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was disabled and off the grid, so to speak. And what that gave me was the gift of time, because like I said, I had the privileges, so I wasn't out in the street. I had a house, you know, I had a roof over my head. My wife, fortunately, we never filed our marriage license. So when I went bankrupt, she didn't have to go down with me, and she was a new teacher. So we had some money, you know, enough money to buy food and, you know, pay bills. So, you know, it was cool. But so it just changed my whole reality of what meaning was for me.
That is so beautiful, like seriously, because one, just simply what you said, I think is beautiful. Two, I think that a lot of people need to hear that now, and especially younger people. Like my biggest age range is 18 to 24.
No, interesting.
And every time I interview someone who's in that age range, like I've lost count on like how many people's biggest fear, biggest insecurity, biggest secret is that they're scared of failing. They're scared of not being successful. Like they're not getting the best grades. Like they don't have the best job. And I always tried to tell them, like, cause like I'm 30, so I'm like in between you and them. And like, I wouldn't say I'm fully at the mindset that you're at, but I'm really working towards it. And like just talking to people in that age range is like hard to, like, you can't, it's hard to tell them through words, hey, like, that's not what's important. They almost have to experience it. Or I think the second best thing is hearing someone who has gone through something like so, like, profound, kind of. Having you say that, like, with me listening to you, as much as I thought I didn't care about success, like, it just, like, really shifted me a little more, too. So I think that's really beautiful.
Well, I would offer this. I mean, I would just say that often what we're presented with within the context of America in particular is that what we're told to believe is success isn't success. I mean, that's what I bought into the belief that you needed to acquire money and titles and some form of establishment certified, you know, respect. But that was empty. I mean, how big of a house do you need? How many cars do you need? How many shiny things do you need? You know, I don't know. Those things don't really matter.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, it's just doing no harm and reaching out and trying to love people and help people. It's really kind of where it's at.
Yeah. No, that's,
I mean, that's
so
what
true.
Gave back to me, you know. So that's why I say, I think that's just a little twisted what we're asking.
Yeah.
Know, what we're telling, what what's reflected, you know, particularly sort of now, and so it's even more so, you know, I thought when the internet kind of, because I'm old enough before the internet, and so I was early on the internet, and I kind of thought the internet was going to be this amazing democratization thing, and was going to really, and now it's just co-opted by stuff, more stuff.
Yeah.
And Instagram and all these things where everybody's trying to put their perfect life out there. People want to get the right photo. And so then if you're a person that's struggling and then you look at that stuff and you think, oh, well, I'm not living that life. And then everybody's striving for some thing that's not even real.
It's not real.
So it's sort of sad, but I don't know.
No, yeah, no, that's really true. And it's also something I'm guilty of, too. Like, if I'm having a bad day, I'm not going to go on Instagram and be like, hey, guys, I'm having a bad day. I would probably take a picture of the sunset later that day and be like, look at what I'm seeing right now. You know, it's like, I don't know. But again, like, the older I'm getting, the more I'm realizing that, too. I'm just like, if I'm not going to post what's real, I'm just not going to post anything at all.
But one of the things I think is interesting, I mean, at least for me, and I wish it was sort of different, but I never really learned anything profound about myself or about life when things were going great. You know, I was just too busy having a good time.
That's true.
And being, you know, kind of dumb.
There's something you said earlier, too, that I want to, like, follow up on, too. You specifically said that success to you is spending quality time with people. Mm-hmm. And then you also said while eating.
Yeah, well, I found that eating is just it's a very significant pleasure. I mean, eating, and there's sex and there's eating that for people will usually say are good things, right? You know, there's not a lot of argument there. And so I cook, and the food thing's always been a thing for me. But my game got very elevated when I was dying, because I was sort of in this space where I realized like every meal could be my last. And I sort of tripped out on that. So I got very real about trying to make extremely good food all the time. And, you know, you cook, people will come.
Yeah.
And then, you know, everybody's hanging out and they like to eat and they like to drink, and then you end up having quality time.
Would you be down to share a favorite conversation you've shared with someone over food?
It'd be hard for me to pick a single conversation.
Yeah, maybe one that stands out to you. I wouldn't want you to like rank them.
Okay, well, here would be one. When I finally met the family of my heart donor, so Richie Brassard, I have Richie Brassard's heart. Richie Brassard was 16 years old when he passed. He was riding on top of a pickup truck coming from a school event with his buddies, you know, car surfing, and his buddy hit a turn and he went off and he died of massive head trauma. Through the transplant organization, I wrote a letter expressing my gratitude and the life-changing situation that the heart, you know, had done for me. And it took his mom and dad 10 years before they reached out. And in my letter, I just said, hey, you know, if you're ever into it, I'd like to give you a hug and cook you dinner. And so when they reached out, they came over and I cooked them dinner and I gave them a hug. And so they brought photo albums and we had this amazing, you know, like family moment where they introduced their son and the heart. And we went through this whole thing. It was incredibly powerful.
I'm trying so hard not to cry right now.
Yeah, it's really powerful.
So do you think about that often, that you have his heart?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I have his picture. I have this picture in my living room. I also have my old heart in a jar.
You do?
In my living room.
Like on display?
Yeah, so that I have it in an antique, chemistry type, like a lab jar. And the thing that's interesting about the heart is it's notoriously just sitting in my living room. It's like out in the open. But for years, people would come in and they would only see it when they were ready. It sort of had a mystique because we would not bring attention to it. You know, we would say, oh, hey, did you see the heart?
Yeah.
You know? But some people would walk in, be the first thing they'd seen. Other people came into my house 3, 4, 5 years. And then one day just went, holy shit, is that your old heart?
Is there a reason why you want it there? Or?
You know, when I got on the transplant list, I don't know, you die, you know, you have death, a lot of death. I had a lot of death around me, too, before it happened. Like, my brother died of AIDS before, you know, he got AIDS before we even called it AIDS. And then AIDS killed every gay man I knew, and I knew a lot of them. So there was a lot of death around me and stuff. So you just get, I'm accustomed to it. I have a more, I'm accept, death is natural to me. We don't talk about death enough. We're all going to die. You need
know,
you got to dig the fact you're going to die and not waste your time. But so when I got on the transplant list, I just said to the people, because they made you go through a psychological profile. And so one of the questions I said, well, so when you take my heart, I want my heart back. And that's cool, right? And they're like, they didn't, that was a first for them. So they were like, yeah, we can do that. And so when I left the hospital, they gave me my heart in a plastic bucket.
Oh my God.
In alcohol, right? And my heart's huge because I had this dilated cardiac myopathy, means your heart gets so large it can't pump
really?
Anymore.
Okay.
So, you know, your heart's supposed to be the size of your fist.
Yeah.
My old heart is like, you know, this big.
That's like half your torso.
It was crazy. Like, it was terrible. Yeah, that's why I was dying. But anyway, so it fills up this jar, and I just sort of wanted that as a testimony to that, which was, and also, you know, I would play games with it. I'd say, like, well, you know, in certain ancient cultures, this makes me a god because I have my own heart, my living.
Is that true? Is that actually a thing?
I made that shit up. Maybe that's true, but, you know, I would just say it
because
it was, you know. Gets people thinking.
That's so funny.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So you were like 36 when you did the transplant then?
Yeah, about that, 37.
Was it pretty fast after that where you felt your body like coming back to life?
The second I woke up in the ICU, I felt better than I had in years. I was on an exercise bike within 5 hours.
Wow.
I got out of the hospital in 9 days, which at that time was kind of a record. And a lot of crazy things happened, you know, like all my skin peeled off.
Oh, really?
Because when I was so sick, my upper dermis really wasn't getting blood flow. So when I got a new heart, all of a sudden, all of my skin got blood flow again, and I just shed like a snake.
Oh, my God. Just your left side, too?
The whole thing. I did a total body peel.
No.
I grew hair on my ears, like little fuzzy hair, new fuzz.
I was all really?
Fuzzy. It was like newborn. Super weird. I was really pretty crazy. There's a lot of metaphor there, you know.
So you said something else. It's so interesting. It's so crazy that like the things you're saying are so crazy to me because you're like just touching base on my last three interviews.
Oh, interesting.
You talked about success and you talked about capitalism and now you're talking about death, which is it's something I struggle with, the idea of like having loved ones die. So I always talk to my mom. I'm like, Mom, why don't we just make death more normal?
But isn't that funny that you need to make death more normal, something that is just so in and of itself?
I know.
Normal.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, that's
probably the most
thing.
Normal thing.
It's, you know, it's inevitable.
Yeah.
So that's the thing, you know, in this culture in particular, it's like, you know, nobody gets around that.
I usually ask questions for my audience, but I have a question for you for me.
Okay.
Do you have, like, what can you tell me to kind of make death less scary to me?
Well, I don't know. I guess I would have to ask you, what about death do you find scary?
That's a good question. I mean, I'm not used to being asked questions.
Yeah, why are you afraid of death?
I guess, like, I'm not scared of me dying. Oh. I'm scared of, like my mom dying.
Mm-hmm.
Like, having to live without her.
Loss.
Yeah.
And you're afraid of loss. Yeah. Well, you experience loss and then you deal with it. Like I say, my brother died. He was 31. And so when he died, I was 27. You know, I didn't expect my brother to be dead when I was 27.
Yeah.
But he was. You know, you expect your parents to die. You expect older people to die. That's something you give some thought to. But you don't expect your friends to die, necessarily, unless your friends are just total circus. So you don't expect that. But then it comes, and then you learn to appreciate the time you had with them.
Do you mind if I look down a list? Are you in a hurry?
No.
Okay. So I have questions on my channel that are like really popular. My audience enjoys hearing strangers answer. And okay. One of them is, who's one stranger you still remember? Is there a stranger that like stood out to you at some point in your life?
Well, let's see. I mean, if there's a stranger that, you know, you always start out as a stranger when you meet a new person.
That's
so
true.
They may become your friend. So
unless it's family.
True. But even then, I mean, your first contact with somebody, they are technically a stranger, right?
That is so true.
So
we're all strangers.
We're all strangers for a moment.
that's so cool.
So what I'll do is I'll focus it on people that I didn't know and did not become my friend. How about that?
Okay.
And also it's a good story. So I got blown up on a power tower in high school.
Oh, dang.
So there's a tower. If you were driving on the 8 west and you get to the exchange for the 5.
Okay.
If you look to your left and it'd be like Old Town, you'll see an A-frame power tower that's right next to the freeway.
Okay, I'm going
to
look out for that next time. Okay.
So kids in this neighborhood, because I grew up in this neighborhood, we used to climb that thing in high school. It was just a thing. You go and you drink your beers and do whatever there, right? Mm-hmm. So one night, me and this dude climbed this thing. And when we stepped off on the catwalk, the transformer underneath us blew up and set us on fire.
Ooh.
And evidently, it was a relatively spectacular event because people came to the space. And after we put ourselves out and we dealt with all that and we climbed down. I'm giving you the Cliff Notes version of the story. We climbed the fence and we were in trouble. We needed to go to the hospital because my friend in particular had taken 55% third degree burns. And first person came up and it was some dude and a woman, and he was driving a Cadillac. And I said, hey man, we need some help. Can you take us to the hospital? And he said, no. So then a car was coming right up behind him, and it was a dude in a microbus. VW microbus. And I said the same question to him, you know, same way. And he's like, yeah, get in. So put my friend in the front seat and I got in the back. And he had a Doberman pincer.
What is that?
It's a dog.
Oh, okay.
And so the dog, I knew we were in trouble because the dog was looking at me in a way that a dog had never looked at me, like, whoa.
Oh, no.
And it was like sniffing us, you know, and tried to lick my neck because I'd burned all the skin.
No.
I had all my skin was hanging off my neck. And this dude took us to the hospital and dropped us off. And that was it. But one dude said no, and the other dude said yes. So I always remember that guy. When I died, I lost a bunch of memories. I had a whole bunch of stuff happen to me, but that event is crystal clear. And I could tell you how they were dressed. I mean, I remember their clothes.
Wow.
I remember everything about them. I needed to get to the hospital.
So you and your friend both were able to put out the fire yourself? Like,
first I thought when it happened, I stepped off on the tower second, and then everything went green. And I thought I was in some sort of quasi-death event. I thought I had fallen.
Oh.
And I was saying to myself, oh, this is death. And I was waiting to like hit the rungs of the tower on the way down. I was thinking, oh, I'm dead. Because I didn't know. Because I couldn't feel anything around me. The tower disappeared and everything went green. And then when the green stopped, then all of a sudden I realized I was holding on to the tower. And my friend was standing in front of me like this, completely engulfed in flames. And, you know, do you know what to do, what you're supposed to do when you're on fire?
I mean, in elementary school, they would say stop, drop, and roll.
Exactly. So that's what they told me, too. So I'm yelling at him. And I'm like, John, you've got to roll. You've got to roll. But we're on a catwalk 135 feet up in the air. And he's trying to get down, but I'm realizing he's not going to be able to do that. And I have to try to get myself to release my hands because I was, like, sort of frozen in time. And so I get to him, and I start patting on him and then tearing his clothes off, and his clothes are wrapping on my arms, and I'm shaking him off, and I finally get his clothes off and his skin's on fire, and I have to beat him down, and finally I put him out. And then I realize, well, what's up with me? And my clothes luckily had not ignited. They just melted. I had a sweater that melted on me. And I felt my face, and like I felt up here, and like all my skin on my face was hanging off. Ooh. And then I freaked out. I'm looking at him and he's just burnt. And I just said, we're going to die if we don't get off this tower. And if you can't make it, I'll go get help. But we should go. And I'd burned my retinas, so I couldn't see, but I'd climbed the tower enough so I remembered it. I could just feel my way out. And it was it was so crazy.
And that sounds so intense.
It was super intense. And like I say, so when those cars came, I was 100% alert.
Yeah.
And needing to get, I mean, I knew which hospital I needed to go to. I knew, you know, how to get there. I was ready to get to the hospital.
Were your parents like, what the heck were you doing?
Well, no, it was a different time. I mean, you know, I did stupid all the time. So it wasn't my mom, it was just like, oh my God, what have you done this time type of thing.
So my last, how I end every podcast is I ask the stranger I'm interviewing, what's been the most painful part of your journey? Not like physically, but like just in other terms. And what's been the most beautiful part of your journey? And if you could share the answer in like with specific situations as opposed to like general answers, that would be great too.
Pain's an interesting concept. I mean, so much of life is pain. But yet, like I said earlier, you know, so much of your learning is in times of pain. So it's always sort of a double-edged sword, you know. I'd say the hardest thing is the realization of the limit of your ability to help people in the midst of their own crisis. And you know, specifically like, you know, like for like my brother was, you know, sick. And he went through a period of dementia, and when he was in his state of dementia, he became extremely paranoid and thought I was an agent that was undermining him. And I had to actually stop talking to my own brother near his deathbed. And that was incredibly painful, and there was nothing I could do about that.
Yeah.
And even though we had this wonderful relationship at that moment, I had to sever it, because every time I dealt with him or talked to him, he would freak out because he thought I was some sort of like agent of doom. So the limits of your efficacy can be extremely painful. Joy it would be the antithesis of that, you know. I mean, I've been so lucky. I'm so privileged. I mean, I realize all of my gifts. The moment I share, you know, when I talk about the transplant stuff, usually when I do transplant talks, is I say, you know, I was laying in the kite park down by Fiesta Island on my back with my, at the time, 2-year-old daughter in the middle of the week watching kites fly on a typical San Diego day. And I had $20 in my pocket, and that $20 had to last the whole week for whatever discretionary spending we were going to do. I was bankrupt. I had no more career. I was completely anonymous. But I realized I was free. And like I said, I wasn't in danger. We could pay for the roof over our head. We could eat, to keep the lights on. So we had the basic needs covered. And I was free. And I always thought I was going to get that when I was rich and powerful and dominant and all these other bullshit things. But here we were in the middle of the week, free, watching kites fly on a sun warmer day, and we could have enough money to go get a burrito if we wanted to. It was such an epiphanic moment to realize that I had everything that I needed in life, and all the gifts, all the things were all right there.
Yeah.
And I just did, you know. So.
Oh, man. I feel lucky that I met you today.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah.
It's been nice to talk.
I appreciate you stopping, first of all. And I appreciate you saying yes. And I appreciate you taking the time to talk to me and to get deep, too. Because I know, like, it does take some vulnerability to, like, talk about past experiences. So,
yeah.
Thank
you
again.
Yeah, this is great.
Yeah. It's fun, right?
Yeah,
it's like cool.
Yeah, I think we're good, right?
Yeah, I think
out there in podcast land.
Thank you so much. Good job. Awesome. Okay. Wow. I feel like a new person after that conversation. And that is it for today's episode. Thank you for listening. Before you go, I do have a huge favor to ask. Because my podcast is so new and there are so many amazing podcasts out there, the best way you can help me stand out and grow is to leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcast. This podcast is available on other platforms as well, like Spotify, Anchor, Google Podcasts, and many others. So following and subscribing on there will help also, but again, the best thing you could do is to leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcast. I hope you'll consider doing it. To make it fun, I thought it would be cool for you all to answer the following question under hopefully a 5-star review. Who's one stranger you still remember? I'll read through all your answers, share some on my Instagram story. So if you want me to tag you, please make sure to include your Instagram handle as well. My Instagram handle is actually thor.aya. Thank you so much. I love you all, and we'll meet again next Tuesday.